Instructional Designers in Offices Drinking Coffee is brought to you by Domino, makers of Domino One, the all-in-one cloud-based e-learning authoring tool for teams. You can learn more at domino.com. That's DOMINKNOW.com. Now, here's this week's episode.
Oh, that's usually the best guest chair dancing we've had ever.
At least, yeah.
Whew. Let's just do this. This is good.
Let's just 45 minutes of dancing.
The idiotic playlist.
It's the last day of ATD 22. I hope all of you that are there are enjoying yourselves, and I'm sure you're walking down the hallway with your coffee right now, and you've got Idiotic on your iPhone, and don't bump into anybody. I know you're checking it out.
Don't spill any coffee.
Yeah, we got weather reports coming in from all over the place. It's just, it's a Wednesday morning. I hope everybody's fired up. Mm-hmm. Whew, weather reports. Chris, we have a guest today. Who in the heck are we talking to today?
Folks, we have Mark Lassoff joining us again. Mark's been with us before, but maybe some of you haven't met Mark. So Mark, introduce yourself to the gang.
You bet. I am Mark Lassoff. I am in Orlando for ATD. I am the founder and president of what is now the Tech Learning Network at techlearningnetwork.com. We are a new streaming television service that teaches digital skills to people who want to become more technical, people who are just one skill away from their next job. And we also have a library of courses that we license that are probably already in your LMS. And I normally am in Westport, Connecticut.
Very cool. So let's just check in before we jump in. How is your ATD experience so far?
So ATD itself feels still a little sparse. They said about 5,000, and the last ATD ICE I went to was closer to 15,000. So the good news is you get to talk to people at length that you might not get to spend time with. The bad news is, that kind of richness and diversity wasn't there. It felt, very strange from an ICE perspective not to have any of the Chinese delegations there or the Russian delegations who are usually noticeable, due to COVID and other reasons. But the content was good. I went to several good sessions, a lot on, very traditional instructional design topics around project management, planning, design, assessments, tooling. I myself am kind of a production guy. I thought they were a little light on production, but, you got to serve the audience that's there. And when the audience is smaller, you serve the widest interests. From personal perspective, I found the absolute worst hotel in Orlando to stay at. It was an official conference hotel. I've never seen mold growing on a shower head before, but that was an entertaining experience.
Ugh.
Like, you ever been in a room that's so humid that everything is wet? It was that kind of thing. Wet and corduroy don't go well together. But on the other hand,
we had a room in Vegas for one of the events in Vegas once, and we walked in. There was a very large circular stain on the carpet right near the door, and I'm pretty sure it was a murder scene. It was like, whoa, yeah, no, this is not safe anyway.
I think Kevin Thorne is here, and he tells a great story about finding basically a body in front of his door in Las Vegas that is one of the funniest. If you're ever with Kevin, ask him about that. It's a pretty good story. But yeah, other than the hotel, what's nice, of course, is, after the 2-year layoff is just reuniting with friends and the dinners and the lunches and just the hallway conversations with people that I haven't seen in a long time. There's Kevin. You should bring Kevin back just to tell that story. It is
yeah, well, we'll put that on the calendar for the next drink and draw. We'll have him sketch it.
Right.
What did the body look like in front of the door? Well, here's how you draw a body in the currently unconscious position.
Right. And now, Kevin, can you describe the suspect to the sketch artist, and then he'll draw it himself, and we'll have the sketch of the.
It'll be good. But hey, were there any sessions on Photoshop? Speaking of production,
I did my session actually similar to what I've done here in the past, talking about kind of inexpensive video tips. There was nothing specific on Photoshop. Like I said, there was kind of a lack of production kind of stuff really in the program. There were definitely, you know, the expo, the whole range of tools that you'd expect, a lot of LMSs, you know, a lot of just like leadership training, a lot of soft skills trainers, which, you know, being more of kind of on the production side is not something I know a lot about. So it was interesting meeting some of those people as well.
I saw a lot of pictures of those vendors, people, a lot of selfies, a lot of marketing stuff came across the Twitter world from those particular companies. And I it's always struck me that ATD has a very large presence of those companies, which is good. I mean, they're part of our industry too, for sure. It always just reminds me, oh yeah, that's right. There's these.
No, I had dinner last night with someone who, you know, a friend who I've known for years, and then someone, you know, a friend she had in the sales training world, which is something I knew nothing about, and really interesting talking to him and kind of learning about that whole ecosystem, which, you know, is part of us, but also kind of has a great deal of the Venn diagram that doesn't overlap. So it was really interesting because it really is a world unto itself.
Yeah, that sales enablement side of the world is very much a part of us, or at least it feels like we should be. And sometimes instructional designers are in that world, but not all the time.
Yeah.
But we should probably get into this Photoshop thing. Let me
Photoshop, that's right.
Yeah, let me set the stage while you're prepping your screen, or if you want to or whatnot. But we wanted to talk today about not just, you know, general tips and tricks and stuff, but you and I have had a conversation in the past, and I've seen you write articles on LinkedIn about our profession, whether you're an instructional designer, no matter what side or what element you're in, if you're building or part of the design and development process, we should be leveling up our game. We should be leveling up our skill sets a little bit. And instead of, it's not that it's bad to be using PowerPoint for images and whatnot, but if we're going to be a profession and if we're going to do professional quality stuff, we should probably start learning how to use professional quality tools. So does that about sum up your feelings on this?
Yeah, it does. And I would just add to that, you know, my approach, I first of all, I'm not an instructional designer. My background is more on the media and development side. And so I really have a media first approach to this. I think what we're all building is media, and that our media has to stand up against the other media that people see every day, from Netflix and YouTube and video games and all the other things that people consume. Otherwise, we're not going to be credible by comparison. It's just an obligation to keep up. And often, not to pick on PowerPoint, it's a great tool for creating presentations. We're trying to put round pegs in square holes by not using what is optimal tooling to get the best results.
Nice. Yeah. Well, let's figure out where we start. I mean, obviously there's basics and things like that, but I didn't really want to do a basics session with you today, right? Like, just, I thought to myself, Photoshop is such a complex tool, not necessarily complicated, but it has a learning curve. But let's just assume that people can go and find some of the basics of how to navigate and all that kind of stuff online into YouTube. But we wanted to try to talk specifically about what are some common things that instructional designers might be doing, or that if you're also a one-man band and you want to level up, you know, your development work and whatnot, do some Photoshop, some advanced, like, what are some of those tips and tricks that would do that?
Right, and these aren't necessarily advanced, but these are things that you can't do inside of PowerPoint. So you kind of, I want to give people justifications to learn Photoshop.
Right.
So this first one that I'm going to show you here is changing coloration of an image. And people do this for two reasons. One, you might do it for color correction, where an image was taken in poor light and doesn't look good and you want to improve the overall quality, or you might do it for creative reasons. So here you'll notice I've got a portion of the Chicago skyline here in this image. And one of the things we could do is change the coloration throughout the image. So I'm going to go ahead and in the layers palette, double click on the background layer, layers being just sets of pixels that are separated onto layers and stacked. And now I can work on the pixels in this layer. Since I like to work non-destructively, I'm going to go and add another layer to this called an adjustment layer. This adjustment layer will lie on top of the layer that has the pictures of the image of Chicago and adjust the pixels on this layer. You'll notice that if you can see well here, I'm adding an adjustment layer to adjust the hue and saturation of this image. Hue is just another word for color, and saturation means the intensity of the color. So we're going to select that, and we're going to use this adjustment layer in order to adjust all the pixels on the layer below it that has the picture of the city. So one of the things I can do is, for example, select all of the blue pixels in the image and change the hue of those pixels and make them really intense in some other color in the spectrum. And you notice as I go through here, we can create kind of some neat coloration for the image based on changing the hue, the saturation, and the lightness or darkness of the image. So this would be an example of trying to create some type of either thematic or creative effect simply by making color adjustments here to the individual image. And of course, I could take any color inside the color set that we're using, or the color space that we're using rather, and make changes to it. So we could make changes to all of the reds and give the reds more of a purple hue. I guess there's not, kind of resaturate them, and we start getting some interesting yellows. Second example of color change. You'll notice that the child here and the background is a little desaturated. The colors aren't as intense as they could be. And I believe just by looking at this, that actually in this image, and this is just an image I downloaded from a stock library, that this image was actually composited, meaning they cut this kid out from somewhere else. Regardless, let's go ahead and let's intensify just the background and leave the kid desaturated. So I'm going to choose select and subject, and you'll notice the marching ants indicating that the pixels with the child are now selected. I'm going to inverse that by choosing select and inverse, and now just the background pixels are selected. You'll also notice that the marching ants now go all around the edge of our document, around the rectangle or bounding box. I'm going to double click the layer again to release the pixels. And I'm going to make a copy of those background pixels onto a new layer by choosing layer, new, and layer via copy. And you'll notice here in my layers palette at the bottom right, I now have two layers. The top one does not include the child. The bottom one does. But now I can work just on layer one. And again, I can go in and make adjustments just to the colors on that layer. So again, I'm going to choose layer, new adjustment layer. And this time I'm going to choose vibrance. And we're going to work just on those background layers. And I'm going to increase the vibrance. And if you watch the greens, see how much more intense those are becoming. So now we've changed the background and we've kind of changed the feel and the way this image is composited. Now, obviously this, you know, when you do these things, you should have a reason for doing them, whether it fits in thematically, makes your images more into you trying to prove some kind of point, but whatever it is, you should have a reason for doing it. But those are the first techniques that I'm going to show you that don't necessarily work particularly well in other software that people typically use. Buddy's noting that some of the pop-up windows might not be showing, and I apologize for that. I unfortunately don't have control over that, but hopefully you saw the change in the image and got the gist of what I'm doing.
Yeah, I think it's the menus at the top of your screen that aren't showing the menu bar at the top. It's only the Photoshop window that's showing.
So okay. Every time I'll try sharing my entire screen next time, maybe that'll help.
Yeah, we're not seeing the drop downs when you click the menu, I guess, okay. Is what I'm saying.
So let's dwell a minute or two here just on uses, because certainly one of the things that I thought of as you were working, you know, with the skyline, but altering the reality of it really by tweaking it. So that kind of thing is maybe great for like title pages and stuff where you're not looking for necessarily realism. You're looking for kind of an emotional effect to support, the path that you're going down. But any other kind of ways that you can see this applied?
Sorry, Chris. Yeah, no, I kind of anticipated your question before you asked it there. I apologize. I think, emotion is real important, in telling a story and trying to engage people in learning. So, if you're describing something that is dark or, something that is dangerous, you might darken all your images thematically in order to fit in. If you're then talking about a resolution, you might brighten your images, just as an example. Yeah. If you're trying to represent older times, you could take the color out of your images entirely using grayscale images. Mm-hmm. I'm going to show you some more techniques as we go here. Then the point isn't any specific technique, but I think we have a habit as an industry of, getting the image and thinking, okay, that's done. And there's so much more we can do to help tell a story within our learning or find images that better fit or create our own by compositing several elements of other images. I've been discussing this idea with a couple of colleagues of educational marketing or content marketing, where you're trying to get people excited about educational or training content before they get into it. And that's another, real strong use where you can start compositing very, very, highly polished, highly professional marketing for the learning that you're doing. And for me, as someone who sells learning direct to the consumer, it's critical. But in any environment, you want people to be motivated to take the learning, and you also want to show them that you respect them enough to do a professional job.
Yeah, I think a lot of it is to mention marketing. It is a lot of us that work inside of corporations and whatnot in the industry. You'll get a marketing packet from the marketing department, and they'll say, here's all of our standards, here's our color palette that we use, here's all this, that, and the other thing. And if you get images or you take your own images or photos for your learning stuff, you might want to tint them to lean in a particular direction that supports that color palette, right? I mean, it's not enough to just say, oh, I'll make all my background pages that particular color that's in the color palette for the company, or the company blue, or the company's, yellow, or whatever the standard company color is, right? You could do that. But if you start to subtly shade everything in that way with some contrasting colors, you can really start to get a theme. And then also, let's not forget about the psychology behind color too. I don't know how much, people really can, apply to it, or if you believe in it or whatnot, but, reds evoke a certain emotion, yellows evoke a different type of emotion or action, oranges are supposed to do something else, right? All that kind of stuff. I think it all applies.
Yeah, no, I definitely, and actually Buddy just made a comment that reflected exactly what you said about using the brand colors over the top of cover photos in order to reflect the brand. I mean, there's all sorts of things you can do once you understand the tooling. The issue is, right, you've got to take the time to understand the tooling, because it is a significant uphill climb to learn Photoshop. But it does empower you as a designer to do much, much more before you take the images and put them into an authoring tool like Domino.
Yeah. So, and everybody, just so you know, I know, just in case we can't see the menus again or whatnot, just know, you guys, that you can go out to Mark's website and you can get all the tutorials and whatnot on all of these features and things like that, and get more specifics and be able to practice it and stuff like that. So don't feel like you're missing out on something here, for sure. There's definitely places for you to get this info.
If someone mentioned they're already taking the course, but at the end here, I'm going to give you a way to take kind of an entire course from which this is drawn from. So, if you do it quickly, it won't cost you any money. So you want to do another technique?
Yeah, let's do it. Yeah. Let's jump in.
Okay. So let me go ahead and share again. I'm going to share my entire screen this time. It might see me kind of thumbing around here a little more, but this might work better. All right, and let me bring Photoshop back up. All right, you guys see Photoshop now?
Yeah, there you go. And we got the bar at the top too. Yeah.
Okay, wonderful. So that was better. I apologize for doing it the wrong way before. So, you know, one of the things that we often do is we composite a number of images in order to make things, you know, make our, you know, to make things that didn't exist before. Just an example of how we use this. If I go to our website and just scroll down to the bottom, if you look at kind of the tags or the thumbnails from a couple of courses that we've loaded into our new platform here, this is kind of where I'm going with this, compositing a number of different elements to get to a single graphic. So let's take our background here, and I'm gonna go ahead and select all, and let's fill it with kind of an orange color that I've already selected over in my color selector on the left. And let's take a photo of one of our cast members, and let's put him on here. Now, this is our content team leader. His name is Mitchell, and I'm going to position him. And you notice that the problem is we took a picture of him against our green screen. But luckily, again, using select and subject with having the appropriate layer selected, I can cut him out of that green screen pretty easily. I'm going to click select and inverse. We'll delete all the green. Oops, I've got to convert this to a raster object, meaning it's just a set of pixels. There we go. And I can combine here to make this more interesting. I'm going to take one more image that I have of this lightning. And what I want to do is use this to create some texture in the background. So you see, I've kind of got this lightning kind of texture. We'll position it like that. We'll position this between Mitchell and the background layer. I'm going to change the blending mode, which is how this interacts with the layers behind it. And I'm going to lower the opacity. And now we've created a little bit of nice texture in the background here. And now I can add as a third component some text. We change the color of it to something you could see, like white. And let me just adjust the leading here. Need to come down a little bit on the size.
Okay, now hold on. But here we hear. There's a tip you can add there. I'm not exactly sure what you were doing, but were you clicking and just dragging to the right to increase that point to do the leading?
Oh, I forget. Yeah, that's a hold, let me. I've embarrassed myself with my spelling here. Hold on.
I thought that was just Spanish as a different word for.
No, that was just a typo. So here now, right? So this is something very few people know, but in all Adobe products, you can scroll through the different options by clicking or pointing at the icon to the left in the palette and dragging right and left.
Ah, that's what you were doing.
That's a little known trick. And if I wanted to here, I could actually make some adjustments to make it look like he's holding this text right here in his hand. We could add additional effects. Point is here, I've used now a couple of different components to put together an image that's heading towards something that's a little more visually engaging than there's something I could do from just, you know, one image and just kind of placing it. So again, the idea is now, the second idea that I'm sharing with you is that we're taking multiple images and compositing them into a single image in order to make it more engaging and interesting. And obviously, you know, we could spend a lot more time with that. But you kind of get the idea of what we're doing, multiple images from multiple sources to create something new.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that subject select is pretty darn cool.
Yeah, that's new in the latest iterations of Photoshop. If you haven't done that before, if you haven't have an older version or haven't seen that before, it's a real time saver. There's another one that's funny. In if you use Premiere for editing, you can now automatically synchronize audio from different sources, which you used to have to do by hand. You know, like people take the clapboard and you know, find that point. that's all done automatically in the software, but very few people know. So I like having my staff struggle for a few minutes and then showing them I can, hey, look, I can do this in 2 seconds if you know what you're doing. Same thing with subject select. Because some people, a lot of people still doing it the old way and they're struggling. I'm like, nope, done.
Yeah.
There's a lot of new AI built into Photoshop. And if anybody knows Phil Kousel, who's a frequent speaker on Photoshop, he demonstrates all the different AI features, which are pretty cool. So I learned some of this from him. Yeah, Buddy mentioned there's neural filters that are interesting too, in order to change season, time, and day. Yeah, absolutely.
Wow. Yeah, I'm going to have to find those. I thought it was pretty cool just to find subject. I'm like, because I remember doing that pixel by pixel dragging around the edges back in the day, you know, trying to draw that selection out just perfect.
Kevin Thorne just asked if I know or use Affinity Photo. Affinity Photo is a inexpensive non-subscription alternative to Photoshop from Affinity. I think they're a British company. I have used it. I like it a lot. You know, for just personally, because it has such a small audience, I don't work with it a lot because there's no market to teach it, you know, and get people into courses. But having used it for fun, I do really like it, Kevin. It is, I think it's, if you don't want to spend, and my company now spends, you know, quite a bit on the Adobe subscriptions. If you need something that's more budget oriented, you can look into Affinity Photo. It has most of these features.
Cool. Just before we jump too much further, Richard's asking in the chat about thoughts on use of pastels versus more highly saturated colors. Interesting, you know, visual
who's your audience?
Design. Yeah.
I mean, who's your audience, right? You know, pastels are, you know, have a certain mood or audience they might be associated with. You know, if you're using bright primary colors, you know, that's generally associated with childlike audiences. You know, the color palettes that you use, as Brent mentioned a few minutes ago, have meaning. So, you know, I don't think, you know, I think the worst reason to use a color is, oh, our CEO likes orange, so make something orange. And, you know, and she likes ducks, so put ducks in there. You know, those are terrible reasons for making design decisions. Your design decisions should be based on your audience, on what you're trying to communicate, on the material. And if you can't justify what you're doing, then just be minimal. You know, I think it's really, really important for people to do less when they don't have a really good justification for doing so, for doing more rather.
Mm-hmm. Here's the million-dollar question. Is there ever a time that you can combine both saturated colors and pastels?
You stumped me. I don't know.
I don't know.
That's
either.
It. There will not be a third appearance for me on this podcast. You have absolutely stumped me.
Didn't mean to stump you. It just crossed my mind as I was reading that question in the ask a question section as well. I was like,
well, now I know why I was stumped, because Buddy said church on Easter. So if you bring on, you know, the New York Jew and the answer is church on Easter, you're not going to get that answer from me because I did not know that.
A good example of how colors sometimes have cultural references that.
And sometimes too, you know, if you're doing international, you know, work that's going to be seen internationally, you sometimes have to be a little bit careful because there are colors that have very negative connotations in some cultures. Mm-hmm. So you've got to have an awareness and some cultural sensitivity towards that. You know, design is not necessarily international. So you've got to do some research about where your design is going to be seen, so to make sure that you're sending the correct message in that place.
For sure.
Yeah, exactly. I think Kevin's experienced a lot of this. Kevin Thorne, I'm referring to. He's in the chat. For those of you that don't know him, has done some really interesting work creating comics and instructional comics and for other cultures, and he had to learn a lot about that kind of stuff and how to draw the characters and the clothes they're going to wear. And I'm assuming we never got into colors, Kevin, but yeah, I'm sure that was a big part of it as well. What you can and can't color certain types of dress and whatnot.
But before I do the next demo, Tanya made a comment that I really like. I want people to stop using pink and purple when targeting women. I think that's I think sometimes, because a lot of the people in instructional design are not trained in graphic design, we go for very obvious kind of social you know, social norms that are maybe hackneyed or even offensive to people, you know, and I think it is time to break out of those stereotypical colors, because I think it's one of the things that we do that just, you know, doesn't really speak to good design. It doesn't speak to the content. It just kind of continues existing stereotypes. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a great point that Tanya made.
Yeah. As a colorblind e-learning developer, I'd like to make all of mine black and white from now on, and then I'll just be able to be just fine.
Karen mentioned she used PaintShop Pro years ago. I want to ask Karen if that was the software that actually came in a paint can, because there was one of these I remember years ago that actually came in a paint can. I thought that was really cool. You want to do another one?
Yeah, yep. Let's do it. Yep.
All right. So let me go ahead and get ready here. Okay, looks like we're there. You can see my messy desktop. All right, so sometimes when we're cutting people out, the designs are more complex. With this design, now, because there is a great deal of contrast between this child who looks like he's been beaten frightfully, and the background, we should be able to cut him out okay. But I want to point out here, if we zoom in on these little wisps of hair, this used to be a total nightmare when cutting people out. I can do it with select subject, just like before. And this should do well because of the amount of contrast. But if we zoom in, you can see here that actually it's not doing a great job in selecting individual strands of hair. Now, you may not care. But if you want to get an exact cutout here, we actually can go into quick mask mode and use the.
Okay, hold on one second. What'd you click to go into quick mask mode?
Sorry about that. I hit the Q on my keyboard.
Ah, there we go.
We can go into quick mask mode and we can actually start painting with black and white to paint the mask or the area that's selected for the subject here. I am terrible at this. I don't have the hand skills to do this, but the idea here is I can paint or remove this mask from areas here. So here I'm removing the mask, and these areas would be part of the selection. Now, obviously, I'm making this worse instead of better because, you know, this is a quick demo, but we could go in with a very, very fine brush. I'm going to come down to like a 2-pixel brush here and start selecting individual, I can't even see where my cursor is, individual strands of hair like I'm doing here, and make a much better cutout. If I get out of quick mask mode by hitting Q, you notice those areas are now included in the selection in the mask. Now, these are the types of things that if you want this level of accuracy, you can have it, you can do it, but now you're into hours of work in Photoshop. By the way, this little black eye that he has because he got into a fight with his friend is kind of bothering me. So I'm going to click the Band-Aid tool here, which is called the Spot Healing Brush. And I'm just going to go under his eye like that. And let's get rid of that black eye. And notice as I move over there, we're improving that black eye. So now he doesn't have to lie to his mother about how he got it. Now, sometimes, right, it's not obvious what the subject is inside of a piece, right? If I want this leaf that's right here, right, I can't hit select and subject. It has no idea what I want when I hit select and subject. So it selected that leaf and a bunch of other stuff there, probably only because I dragged over there earlier. So there are a number of other selection tools I can use. One being the magnetic lasso tool. This has been in Photoshop forever. And the magnetic lasso tool will use color differential to figure out where the edge of something is and allow me to select it by carefully dragging around it. But you can see I got a little off track there. So I'm gonna hit delete several times to go back and see if I can keep this on the line. This is one of those things that's a lot easier if you have one of those drawing pads. I forget the name for it. That's not the right name.
The Wacom?
Yeah, the Wacom tablet. Thank you. That's a pretty good selection.
Not bad.
So I could now, for example, take this out of the background and I'm going to zoom out a little bit. And I'm just going to make about 30 of these and start spreading them around, just making copies and pasting those pixels with your typical copy and paste shortcuts, Command C and Command V. Oops, got the background there. And now you can see I've got a whole bunch of these, kind of leaves that I made just by selecting the pixels. And that selection obviously was pretty good because those leaves look pretty good. So, you know, the idea here is that I don't need to have an entire image. If I want just a bit of an image, Photoshop has all sorts of different ways of selecting bits and pieces of an image. And I could bring them into another image, use them again in the image, improve them, etc. And also that we can, you know, cure black eyes on teenagers.
Let's talk about how the selection process and pulling those individual objects out might be used in an e-learning project. Anybody in the chat want to jump in here as well and add in the chat where you might use a selection? What do you guys think?
Yeah, I could see where that particular leaf might be something where I could almost, you know, build a frame, for instance, you know, it or something like that, or like an edging, you know, to a page or something like that, and then have other stuff, you know, on
or you even creatively use it as breadcrumb navigation in something that's related to nature, or, you know, something, if you're doing something on global warming, you can pick that out, use that as navigation. You can use that as a position indicator. You know, there's all sorts of things you can do if you think beyond the typical boundaries of you know, what you've done before. You
know, turn that leaf shape sideways and you got yourself a nice button shape. Put a little text exactly. Over it. There you go.
So the thing is, you know, it's not so much, you know, that part of it isn't so much learning the tool, but teaching yourself to see differently and look at images in terms of the components of the image and being able to use individual components. You know, boy, I want, you know, the block from this image and the person from this image and the background from this image, and being able to composite stuff that doesn't look like stock art anymore, but looks like it's highly relevant to the learning that you're creating.
I'm laughing at your dad joke, Chris.
Yeah, I didn't think it was worth interrupting, but I had to get it out of my brain anyway.
Ouch.
Yeah. Ouch.
But yeah, Buddy's got a great one. Drag and drop interactions, cutting those objects out. I've run into projects before where you want to have a particular, like, not a product, but a tool or something that people are needing to use in a manufacturing process or whatever. And there isn't any clip art for it or anything like that. So you go and you take a picture and it's like, it's sitting on a table and it's got all the other stuff around it. You're like, you know what? I really just want that thing, you know? So then you have to be able to use the subject select or select and cut it out.
You also can use, you know, you can use bits of different images to create a motif for your learning, a motif or a theme where, you know, you're using all of the, I'll use nature because I just use leaves, you know, you're using all of these elements from nature to create a motif for something about global warming. You're using different, you know, if you're doing food safety, you can use different elements from food images, put those together to create a motif. You know, I mean, you're limited here by your creativity. You know, they call us instructional designers. So, you know, I think part of that is using our inherent creativity to create something interesting.
Yeah, I think, your point earlier, it levels us up. It levels up our skill set, and it makes the work look like you put in a lot of work. You didn't just drop a clip art in, add some text, move on to the next thing, drop some clip art in, add some text, right? You put some thought into it, and I think just those little things, I think sometimes we think don't really make a difference, but as a user, I know I get drawn in and I feel more comfortable when I feel like I'm looking at something that is of high quality.
I think it's credibility, right? I mean, people very much do judge a book by its cover. And, you know, we were talking about this yesterday at ATD. If you're doing onboarding, for example, this may be the very first contact that a new employee has with your brand. What kind of message do you want to send about how your brand is presented, how much you care about the end products that you're showing employees and external stakeholders? You know, I think because there's some research from 20 years ago that shows that people can learn, you know, people can still learn if the graphic design is bad, that's been used as a crutch a little too long. And I'm not sure that in a different media milieu today that that research would still bear out as true, first of all. But secondly, there's all sorts of other reasons that the graphic design is important, aside from, you know, enabling learning quickly. I've got one more. I know we're running out of time, but this one is cool. Can I show that one?
Yep. Let's go.
This one is particularly cool, and it involves the new AI features of Photoshop. So this image, let's just say this image, I mean, is kind of a strange image, but let's say we wanted this top part with the toy, but we didn't want this bottom part. But the problem is we've got this very irregular rug pattern, right, that we'd have to replace. Well, now with the AI in Photoshop, I'm going to select this, and I'm going to choose Content Aware Fill from the Edit menu. I didn't spend time making adjustments to make this look 100% believable, but you get the idea here.
Wow.
So it's actually used the background pattern in the rug to make this look kind of seamless as an eliminated part of the image. That's one of the new kind of AI features of Photoshop. And you'll notice it actually put that on a separate layer so we could make some adjustments here. But that's the grand finale of cool right there. That one. And I think, you know, I mean, anytime you have an image that you're looking at, you're saying, man, I would love to use this, but it's got too much, you know, too much crap in it that I need to get rid of. Now you can get rid of it and retain the background patterns. And I think that's very, very cool. Kevin Thorne says, hey, Content Aware is the best thing since animated GIFs.
Yeah, that just blew my mind. I'm like, yeah, I can use that.
That is crazy.
It does. Yeah. I mean, and I've taken out like where I had an image and I wanted to use one person from the image, but the background was complex. I've been able to like take someone out of a swimming pool. So I'd only had the person I wanted to use and the other person disappeared almost seamlessly.
So this would have been really, really helpful in the Soviet era of removing people who were no longer in favor from historic photographs over time and
or who had been knocked off.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, anyway, sorry. That's
well, I mean, it would have eliminated the whole 80s movie trope of like tearing people out of the picture after you broke up. You know, divorce is so much easier now.
It's AI. It's AI powered right. Now.
Yeah, it is. Kidding.
Let's take a second as we're encroaching upon our close up here, but maybe just a couple of tips for where people can draw inspiration from outside of, you know, the storyboard that you get sent, etc. I mean, I'm thinking you've mentioned, you know, all the media that surrounds us and trying to be trying to be aware of that. But it's sometimes, you know, if you're in the middle of a Netflix thing and you're, you know, involved in plot, et cetera, you know, you're not thinking maybe about what's actually, you know, being done to you visually, you know, to put you in a particular place or to engage you, et cetera. Any techniques? I mean, how do you watch that kind of stuff? Are you watching it like with two halves of your brain at the same time?
Well, a lot of so because we're a video shop, you know, 90% of what we're doing is we're targeting our particular graphics for video. I mean, it's not, you know, that different than creating graphics for an authoring tool. You know, so for me, what we like to do is watch what we think are some of the best graphics producers out there. So, you know, watch some clips from NBC's Olympics coverage and look at their on-screen graphics and how they're produced. Watch ESPN. All of those are Emmy award-winning graphics and some of the best, you know. And remember, I mean, their goal is the same as ours. That's visual information, right? They're trying to provide information. So it is applicable to learning. So that's one of my tips. And two, do a Google image search. Take an image that you like the graphic. Put that as your bottom layer, kind of fade it out. And then recreate the graphic. You're not violating any copyrights. Just and then delete the original image. So recreate it with your own branding, your own colors. We do that a lot. But yeah, I mean, I think too, it's you know, let's not be afraid. Let's break out of some of the traditional boxes and try some new things. You know, the worst that could happen is it won't work. You know, the best that can happen is, you know, over time we'll start moving ourselves, we'll move our profession forward, we'll raise the bar on what we produce. And for me, that's the whole goal.
Very cool.
That is the whole goal.
Brilliant.
And there's our music.
Yeah.
Sorry, I was a little premature before.
Mark, as always, it's fabulous to have you with us. Trip home from the ATD is a safe journey. Drop your contact info into the chat before we depart here.
Yes, and let me mention that if you enjoyed these techniques and you would like to do the whole course, if you can do it within the 7-day free trial, you can do it for free at techlearningnetwork.com. Just sign up for the free trial and you'll get all of the Photoshop videos and some additional material as we post it. We launch our new platform June 6th. You're getting a little preview, but all of this is there at techlearningnetwork.com. And please follow me on LinkedIn. That's where I do the most kind of communication talking about this very stuff.
Right. And from our side, folks, as always, Idiotic is sponsored by Domino Learning Systems, makers of Domino One. Check out the link there if you're interested in learning more about what we can do for you. And keep in touch with us on the LinkedIn group as well. Brent's pasted the link in for that there. We'd love to see you there too. So, gang, see you all next week, and let's dance on out of here.
Let's do it. Thanks Mark. Awesome. Adios. As always. If anybody has any other Photoshop tips, you could share those with us as well.
In the LinkedIn group, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah, why not? Oh, there we go. Here's my special effects. Mark's video effects are way better than this.
My idiotic cup is unfortunately on the desk in my studio, not here in Orlando with me. I didn't think to bring it.
Oh, well, big ending.
Bye.
Bye, everybody.
Adios.